Holmes & Hops is proudly supported by Platt Insurance, your local independent insurance agency offering auto, home, life, business, and farm insurance. They also have a team of specialists that help you with insuring your brewery or winery. Platt Insurance, helping you protect your tomorrow. For more information or a quote, please call them at 330-856-6244 or visit them on the web at plattinsurance.com. Hi everyone, Lisa Resnick with Holmes & Hops. I am sitting outside in this beautiful weather, not 90 degrees. I think we're hovering in the high 80s.
But yeah, close enough.
Yes, not too bad. We are drinking some Penguin City beer, and I am with today's special guest, Mike Naffa of Naffa Hospitality Group. How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing good. It's breathable outside, so I'm very happy.
It is, so it's nice to be outside, too.
It is nice. You got a nice little breeze. You have the birds chirping in the air.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's a nice environment. You have my herbs, some growing, some not.
I saw. They look amazing.
Thank you. Those would be sweet potatoes in a sack.
In a sack? I've never seen them in a sack.
Well, so during COVID, the beginning of it, they had, I'm not sure if you've heard of MasterClass. So MasterClass is this online various courses that you can take. So you can take it with somebody who is an expertise in the economic field, all the way to like Thomas Keller, who obviously is an expert in culinary, to Ron Finley, who is an expert on urban gardening.
Oh, okay.
So we decided, my son and I, to test some of his ideas out and see if they work. And so far, so good.
It's growing.
It is.
It's definitely growing.
So from my understanding, with a sweet potato or any potato, you can take any little spud or whatever that may be growing outside of the potato, plant it even in a sack.
Okay.
And it will grow.
Well, I know a little spud will grow, but never thought of a sack.
Well, now you know.
Makes it easier.
It does make it easier.
Yeah, they all look good.
Trying. Yeah, some of them probably use a little pruning, but hey.
Yeah. What can you do?
I know, right? So definitely want to take this opportunity since I'm sitting down with you, which I do love everything that you have done for this area. And I want to talk to you about the beginning. I mean, when you're a little kid, was it something that you started building blocks or whatever it may be, imagination? What brought you to the point that you're at right now?
When I was a little kid, it was a two-lane highway on 224, and it was all farms.
Oh, wow.
So we never had a thought of doing anything like that. It was just, we were all basically farm country.
Was your family farmers as well?
My father had it. That was his farm.
Oh, and wow.
He farmed part of it, but then the equipment got so expensive, and it was a smaller farm. It was only 35 acres. So he ended up sharecropping it.
Okay, so what does it mean to sharecrop?
It means another farmer who has the equipment will come in. You give the land. He gives the equipment and the work. And then you split 50-50, 60-40, however it is.
Nice.
So, and that's basically how we did it.
So did you grow corn? Gotta ask.
We did corn, we did wheat, oats, everything.
Perfect. Yeah. And then I did learn recently that with corn, you switch on and off. Mm-hmm. Like you can't grow corn consecutively, right?
Right, exactly.
So I've learned a little
bit
about farming.
With all of them. With oats, with wheat, you always throw in hay. Then on, I believe, the fourth year or the fifth year, you do soybeans, which gives it more nutrition back into the ground.
Oh.
So you switch it off. You don't do the same things. You'll go like in a cycle of different things.
I heard sunflowers are really good for the soil as well.
They are. We never did that. So I think that's why they did soybean. It was easier.
So did you farm the land as well?
No. No, we would just ride on the hay wagon with the other kids who were the sharecropper's family.
So you just got to have fun.
That's it. No, we lifted bales of hay and threw them up on there, and found out I had hay fever, so it was kind of hard for me to do that, but I still went out there and sneezed my brains out, but we had fun.
Exactly, as long as you were having fun.
Learn not to wear shorts when you do that, because it tears the part of your legs.
Oh, wow.
When you're pushing, because you're pushing with your leg and your knee to throw it up onto the wagon, bale of hay.
How many acres total was the farmland?
Originally 35, and now we're about 42, 43 acres.
And growing?
We've added. No, I think that's about it for
now. You're good right now?
Yeah.
So what made you decide to go into development because in all honesty, you go from a scarcity of everything that you would have on 224, like you mentioned.
Right.
I think it was it 1980s? That's when the Southern Park Mall came about, right?
No, 70s.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So the 70s and the whole urban sprawl, everybody started coming out to the suburbs.
Came to the suburbs.
That's right.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did.
So is that when the thought came up into your mind of hey, this is intriguing?
No.
No.
What actually happened was with the frontage of the property became commercial. The county just made it commercial 500 feet deep.
Oh, wow.
Which made the taxes get really crazy. And to be able to afford to keep the property and the taxes, there used to be a driving range right across the street, a golf driving range.
Okay.
When I found out they were closing, that's when I thought, that might be a good idea to do. So we did. We built a driving range. It was called Ironwood Funland.
Oh.
We had batting cages and miniature golf and did that for about 25 years.
That does sound like fun.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of work. A lot of work in a short season.
Oh, that's true,
yeah.
Because a lot of it is outdoor activity.
Right. It was all outdoor.
And it's Ohio, Northeast
yep.
Ohio.
Exactly. So as I'd be out there picking up golf balls and baseballs, you kind of dream around a little bit. And, I dreamt eventually I'd like to develop the property. And when we started working on it, we looked at what do we need in our community that we don't have. And the main thing was restaurants and a hotel. So that's where the hotel came about.
That's where, by the way, we all stayed for my wedding.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thank you.
No, thank you.
When was that?
That was 2000 and, I'm going to get in trouble. My husband listens to this, which he will. 2004.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, good. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, no, again, thank you. It was able to house my husband and I and then a bunch of our wedding guests because my husband's from New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so all of them came in from there. And I remember at the time, it wasn't Schicchetti's at the time, which I love Schicchetti's, by the way.
Thank you.
What was the name of the restaurant?
Harry and Jean's.
That's it. My grandma loved that place. That was her go-to spot. If she was hey, let's go to lunch, it was Harry and Jean's.
That was more of a Southern type restaurant, Southern type food. It was very good, but at the end, they grew too fast.
Yep.
And had too many restaurants and ended up losing them all.
So Harry and Jean's was a chain restaurant.
It was a chain.
Okay. So Schicchetti's, though, is...
Schicchetti's is just an individual.
That's our local area.
That's it.
And you know how much we all love our local
it.
Restaurants.
Yeah, that's what seems like everybody does. So that's why we keep doing it.
It's a smart thing to do, because I know I like going to the local restaurants versus going to, not to knock Applebee's. Everybody loves an Applebee's now and then, but obviously we're going to prefer...
You want the locals to make it.
I think we make phenomenal food here.
Yeah.
So I want to enjoy it.
Great restaurants.
Yes, we really do. And a lot of creative chefs around here too.
We do.
So
definitely.
It's pretty neat.
Definitely. It's a good thing.
It is a good thing. So when you started off and you were dreaming about developing the land a bit more into the commercial, bringing in some of those needs that I'm sure you were I would enjoy having it locally near me as well, instead of having to search it out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's usually, I think, where a lot of our ideas and everything stem from is what we desire to have.
Definitely.
And when you do that, typically, if you have the drive, then you can make it happen. And then you get the know-how as you go a lot of times.
You do. You learn.
Yes.
You learn a lot. We didn't. I've never developed anything before, so not knowing it, I tried to surround myself with people who did know. So I got, actually we found out he was one of the top real estate attorneys in the country.
Oh.
Ron Galep. He did all of our leasing work for us, and very, very good at what he does. And then we've got, so he was originally with the Cafaro Company and then went out on his own. Then we hired to do our PR, Marie Cartwright, who was with the DeBartolo Corporation.
Yep.
And then we also hired Anthony Hayek, who was one of the top architects in the area. And then we had a zoning lawyer that we hired. So we tried to get everybody we could, surround ourselves with people who knew what needed done.
Yeah, that was very smart.
That's the only way I could do it. So we were fortunate to do that.
And
so that helped a lot.
And when was NAFA Hospitality Group formulated?
I believe it was around 2003 is when we started. With the whole development, actually. We started putting the road in before we had water to the property. And
that's confidence.
We were very fortunate that the bank, which was Farmers National.
Oh, yes. Love that.
Had a great foresight that they went ahead and were willing to do this project for us, because if it wasn't for them, none of that would have happened. And the development really that's happened in Canfield probably wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Farmers National.
I completely.
Because we were the start of it.
Yep.
And then it continued. It went to Westford and then across the street with the where Chipotle is and everything. None of that would have been around.
No, it wouldn't. And it's much, not to say it's easy, because nothing.
No, it wasn't easy.
Yeah, nothing is easy. And the banks all still have their processes to go through. But when you're dealing with a bank that is local, to have somebody then who understands and sees what you're seeing is extraordinarily important.
And who lives it.
Yeah.
They lived the area, so they knew the area between Frank Payton at the time, who was president, Mark Graham. Those guys knew what we needed in our community and really and believed in me, which was very fortunate.
That's awesome.
So we were blessed with that. That made a huge difference. And we, before we started it, we had to go on the ballot to add to the zoning
of
the property. It was passed unanimously through the county and the township and everybody else. And then the neighbors decided they wanted to do a referendum vote against us.
Ooh.
Because they didn't want to have commercial.
How many neighbors were there at the time? There couldn't have been.
Well, it wasn't just the neighbors near us. It was people on Summit Drive.
Oh,
it
wow.
It was people down further on Raccoon. North and South Raccoon, they just didn't understand that 224 was actually the business corridor going into Canfield.
This is true.
Between Star Center and Rod Levin. That's the actual business corridor coming in. And it was business already. It just needed to be larger so you can accommodate it, and the traffic pattern would help a lot too.
Oh, completely
so
agree.
So we put a fortune into the actual zoning, to get the zoning, to go on the ballot, and to was each time we went on the ballot was over $100,000.
I was about to say, that's an additional expense that nobody wants to incur.
No.
Because it is a lot of money to run those campaigns.
But without that campaign, without that zoning, we wouldn't have been able to do what we're doing now. Westford wouldn't be able to do what they're doing. They weren't able to put it on.
It's amazing to me, because I think that if the residents prevented that from happening, like, what would their actual home value be right now compared to what it is because of everything that you've done? Is just, they're lucky.
It really changed there, especially the ones that were bordering our property. One house, for example, Lowell Ranch, was valued at the time at $94,000. And he fought us tooth and nail.
Of course.
And after we got the zoning finished and it became commercial, he put it on the market for $395.
Oh, wow.
Never got it. It stayed on the market for a long time. But
now that's hopeful.
Yeah, very hopeful. But a lot of things that were happening there to be able to do that. And, you know, one of the neighbors, when we had the zoning meetings, I mean, they had to move them to the fairgrounds because the township hall wouldn't hold the number of people that showed up for this.
Wow.
So when...
You did stir some excitement in Campfield, didn't you?
It was crazy. One of the ladies, one of the neighbors stood up and says, "I don't think we need a hotel in Campfield. It's going to bring drugs and prostitution."
Why does everybody result to that?
And I looked at her and I said, "Excuse me, drugs have been in our town from when I was in school."
Yes.
We didn't use them, but they were around.
Yes.
And as far as prostitution, trust me, they will never be able to afford my hotel. So that kind of ended that.
Yeah, well played. Yeah. But it does. Anytime anybody's against anything, that is like the bottom line.
Yeah.
Drugs and prostitution
is
like the common theme that you'll hear people say.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Do you frequent these places
that
you know a lot about it?
Like, I don't think she did because she was probably in her late 70s, mid-80s at that point. So
probably.
Yeah.
Probably. It was something that she was always told what would be brought that kept her on the straight and narrow.
Yep.
So.
And then we decided we wanted to do restaurants with liquor. Canfield was drying.
Yes.
So... down at the plaza where Giant Eagle is, they put it on the ballot, they lost. Westford put it on the ballot, they lost. They couldn't do it. So I said I was going to put it on the ballot. Everybody said to me, "There's no way, you're wasting your money."
Yep.
Well, we put it on the ballot, did another huge campaign, spent about $125,000 on that one, did dinners for people in our precinct and in the township, so they would see what type of restaurants we were bringing in.
Wow.
So, and everybody was invited to come to it, and we would explain everything that we were doing.
That is such a great idea.
And it worked. It worked when we ended up with the campaign, when it went to the ballot.
Did you hire a firm to help run the campaigns? I'm just wondering who...
Marie Cartwright helped us.
Okay.
Set up a committee.
Okay.
So, I mean, she did a lot of the ideas with it. My idea was to do the dinner. At the time, we were operating in the Maronite Center, so we did the dinner at the Maronite Center. And we did quite a few different things to get people so they could understand exactly what we were doing.
Yeah.
And when we went on the ballot that election, we won 78% to 22%.
That's awesome.
And it was great because we went door to door, and most of the people who, like on Summit especially, the elderly people that lived there, said, "We knew your father, and we know you. And if you say it's going to be a good thing for our community, we'll go out and help campaign for you."
There you go.
So it was the elderly people really pushed it through for us because they realized what we were doing. Now a lot of the neighbors who were opposed to us, their kids all work for us.
Isn't that funny how that works out?
And their families have stayed at the hotel. And we've given a lot of jobs to a lot of local kids, which has been great for them and for us.
It is good. And again, I think even when it comes to the alcohol being brought into the area, a lot of people resort to the drugs and prostitution.
Yeah.
Or who are you going to then bring in from out of our area?
Yeah.
And at one point, you do want to bring people in from out of our area to increase sales volume.
Of course.
And for people to know what our area all has to offer, which will also drive your real estate to increase as well.
Of course.
And whether people like it or not, being able to go to dinner and enjoy a glass of wine or have a good craft beer is really important for people.
Exactly.
And they do determine where they're going to go based upon that.
Yeah, there's no question. There's no question. Without the alcohol, those restaurants would not make it.
I mean, even the city of Campfield, as much as everybody says it's dry, there are pockets that are not dry.
Well, it's all site specific.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually go on the ballot for that exact address to be able to get your license. So that's where site specific is. It's just that address.
I say just make it all. Okay.
It would have been a lot easier for them to do it. They could have done a lot with the green.
Oh, I know. I mean,
the green could be like Hudson.
That's what I would love to see.
It would be amazing. But a friend of mine who has an office on the green really figured out why nobody's ever on the green. He thinks it was Indian burial grounds.
No.
Joking. He was joking. That's because nobody ever does anything on it other than the 4th of July.
That is primarily it. And I know that the mayor has and the city manager have all tried to like bump up events on the green. So people are there more often. It becomes more regular. And they started that last year. Unfortunately, this year, there's not going to really.
No, there can't be.
No. So,
there can't be.
But they are trying to figure out ways to consistently drive people in the area, which then will hopefully bring businesses to want to then open up around the area.
Yeah, you would hope so anyway.
I mean, that's ideal. It's going to take some time.
It is.
But you've got a lot of ground to make up for. Yeah. I mean,
our mayor really has Canfield at heart.
Oh, yes. He's much more progressive.
Very much. Very, very much. He grew up in Canfield. He loves Canfield.
Yes, he does.
Actually, two mayors before him, Bill Kay, was the one who originally wanted to do the green to become like Hudson.
Oh.
And tried and tried and tried and couldn't do it. And it's going to be tough for Mayor Duffett to do it also, but he's at least had the groundwork set for him from our former teacher, Bill Kay, and former mayor, so at least it's a start for him. It's a good start, and like I said, he's got Canfield at heart. And
he really does.
He's trying very, very hard.
I think he will succeed. I think it's definitely going to be one more than one term.
Yeah, oh, no question.
For him to work at this.
No question. Because, we helped them before and we'll help them again.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the green and I agree. I think that it would be great to be a little Hudson over there, a little Sugar and Falls. Yep. Like, I mean, a little
something. It doesn't have to be on a massive scale.
No.
But it needs something to be able to bring money into the community and bring what we need into the community, like we did in the township.
That's exactly it. Because I'm sure, as you know, tax dollars on the commercial side is definitely beneficial to all the localities.
Huge. The amount of money that comes in just from our little development at Ironwood to the school system and to the township is just phenomenal.
It is.
It's unbelievable.
And it helps keep our residential taxes.
It really does.
In check.
And that was one of our key points when we were trying to do the zoning. Is trying to explain to them, commercial development will drop your taxes
or
hold your taxes. And it has. It really has.
Which is nice.
So it's a good thing.
It is very much a good thing.
Yeah.
So, and
for everybody.
It really is. So when we're talking about the commercial development, let's talk about the location in which you have. You mentioned Ironwood.
Right.
And what you have available out there. Do you have anything available for commercial space now?
We have one space left in the plaza fronting 224.
Okay.
And that's 2,400 square feet.
Nice.
That's still available right now.
Is it a blank shell?
It's a blank shell.
So that
we would build it into a vanilla box for whoever would be interested.
Well, there you go. So there's still 2,400 square feet available.
Right. And then behind it, we've got plans for another 22 to 24,000 square feet.
Okay.
But until anybody in our community can get more of a major tenant, which is almost impossible right now.
Yeah, everybody talks about the anchor stores.
Yeah, you need that anchor. You need leases before you could even start attempting anything.
I mean, that's true, because it is a big gamble to just develop a plaza, and especially because when you are doing these developments, you could then pigeonhole yourself into a space that wouldn't work for a particular tenant, and here you have people coming in and seeing the space, and then they're saying, oh, but it's missing this and it's missing that.
Yep.
But if you're able to do it from the ground up, that's ideal.
And that's what we're waiting for. we're waiting now. We're putting it on hold. There's no rush for it. And with everything that's happened with this pandemic, it's definitely on hold.
So. Yes. Yes, that is true. I personally think that commercial real estate, if it hasn't already, is going to be hit from the pandemic. And I think it's going to be more so the lease space than it is going to be the ownership space.
Exactly. I agree 100%.
Because there are it's completely two different variables in commercial real estate.
Yeah.
And 100%, I think that, unfortunately, our lease tenants, who are very important to our communities, are going to be the ones that are going to get hit.
Yeah. And the larger the malls are what's really getting hit right now. And it's so sad to see.
Which they were getting hit to begin with.
Yeah. And now this is like really, really hurting them.
It really is. And the whole, like, because I do know, and I appreciate Southern Park Mall and how they were trying to adapt to what people would want to see to bring them back to the mall.
Exactly.
I'm not exactly sure how this is impacting their plans, because I know that they were going to put a magnitude of money into the Southern Park Mall.
Yeah. They were. And they've got the wherewithal and the experience to be able to do it. Are they going to be able to continue to do it, or are they holding off now? Which, if they are, I would think that would be the smartest thing for them to do, is to hold off. I think what's going to really still continue now is going to be the individual little strip centers.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I agree.
People are going to be able to get out of their car, walk in, walk right back out, go to another store, walk in, walk right back out without walking through a lot of people.
I agree completely. And I've been seeing that trend, which is funny because at one point plazas
were dying off.
Yes.
They were.
And then all of a sudden one thing is true about real estate. You cannot just be like, oh, this is definitely going to maintain every single economic environment. There's going to be fluctuations at all times. So it's ever so exciting.
Constant changing.
Yes.
Constant changes.
So with that, I mean, you do have the plazas that are back.
They are. They are, thank God.
Yeah. That's true. People like plazas. I think that they do like walking down, popping into the shops, coming back out. And I think that they like that outdoor feel,
mm-hmm.
no matter what.
Yeah, and they really do. They really, really do.
And then if they're in a hurry, if they need to grab something real quick before they go to their next destination, what better than, like you said, driving up, running in and coming back
getting
out?
What you want and coming back out. That's why I think a lot of the townscape theory is working so well, with Legacy and places like that, because you can pull up, you go into it, you come right back out.
It's very convenient.
Yeah.
So with the space that you have available, have you thought about like who you would love to see in there? In general, you could be general.
It could be office, but I'd rather see retail.
Yeah.
And retail right now is struggling, so I'd rather wait for retail.
Now, when you, because I do know with office, it's different. When people go to lease space and you're finding out the validity of how long this person's going to be able to last in your building, it's different.
It is.
Than it is on a retail side. So if let's say I had this grandiose idea to open up, I had grilled cheese last night. Grilled cheese mm-hmm. was our dinner last night. A grilled cheese place. And I know like in DC, there was this popular GCDC place that people, it was like a Chipotle.
Yep.
So if anybody has this idea and wants to do it, by all means, go for it. But
that's very popular right now with grilled cheese.
Yes.
It really, really is.
I mean, I would love it. Obviously, I eat grilled cheese even in the summer. Throw a slice of apple on it and
definitely.
Voila. But how would you as a new business entrepreneur, when you're looking at this space, like prove to you, the developer, that I'm a solid business that you should allow or take a chance on to come in? So, of course, you have your bank aspect and getting the loan and stuff. But
if they have a track record, if they have other stores that we can see what they're doing with the other stores, we need to see a business plan to have an idea if they can afford to be in there. So that's something that's huge. We do look at tax returns. People have to give us their tax returns so we know that they're stable enough to be able to make the payments and to be able to last a 5 or a 10 year lease.
Yeah.
Whether they can do it or not is, you know, tax returns give you a little bit of an idea. Performers give you a little bit of an idea. People need to work it.
And maybe have Mike come over and taste the food.
Of course. If it's a restaurant.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be like, that'd be part of my plan.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like we have some property in Lisbon and a restaurant in Lisbon, and I did not want to open another restaurant at the time. So we tried to lease it. And we had a ton of people coming in that wanted to lease the property. At least the restaurant. It was a fully equipped restaurant. Unfortunately, a lot of them would say, my grandma's a really good cook, so I want to open up a restaurant, and grandma can do the cooking. Well, you can't sustain a restaurant.
Yeah.
With grandma doing the cooking if she's in her 80s, for example.
Exactly.
She might be a great cook, but cooking at home and cooking in a restaurant, being able to produce
two completely different things,
are completely different. And that's what we got a lot of. We got chefs who were coming in who were really good chefs, but had no idea how to handle the front of the house.
Yeah.
So you need to have somebody, a team, to be able to do that. So we ended up opening it ourselves. So here we are. When my wife and I first got married, I told her, I said, one thing I promise you, I love the banquet business. I'll always be in that. You'll never see us opening a restaurant. Three restaurants later, she's asking me, what changed your mind?
And I do. I think restaurants are one of the hardest businesses to be involved in.
They are. They are.
I mean, it is blood, sweat, tears. I mean,
it really is.
You're there 24/7. That is your life.
Yep, it is. It really is. And for many, many years, I would do a lot of it myself when we had the banquet centers. Then when we opened the restaurants, then it was different. You had to have a lot more people. And I mean, thank God for our management staff and our chefs at the restaurants, because they're the ones who have carried it and kept everything going. They really have.
It's great when you find good people.
It is. And a lot of our staff has been with us 20 years, 25 years, 29 years. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. They've become friends, and it's somebody that you really can trust. And
it's also a reflection of you.
Yeah,
it is. But it is. That's a reflection of you as well, to be able to sustain people and still want to work for you for that long period of time. And yeah. And 20 years is long, especially like you're talking about even my generation, where people are, I mean, there was a point in time where you'd hear a lot that employers would be like, employees are expendable, like you're right. A dime a dozen.
Yeah.
But then there was a shift, mm-hmm. and it became the employers are a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
I mean, especially depending on where you live and stuff like that.
Of course.
But, so there was always that high turnover. And it's not even that necessarily the employee had an issue with the employer. It was just, it's programmed in you. Yeah. Like every 3 to 5 years, you should find a new job, because that's how you increase your position.
Yeah.
So the fact that you had people that long is a great testament.
The change now is that people, like we had 4 interviews set up one day. And they were spaced, so we'd have enough time to talk to everybody, give everybody up to an hour. And all 4 didn't show up.
What?
So what we've seen now has just been such a complete change. And that's why at this point, our management team is the one who's been pretty much operating, especially during the shutdown and everything. They're the ones who have really stepped up and done the work themselves to keep the restaurants open.
I can't
thank them enough. I mean, if it wasn't for them, I'm immunocompromised. So between my heart and lungs and everything, I'm not allowed to be around people that much. So I go in a little bit in the daytime when there isn't any... a lot of customers or any customers, And unfortunately, I haven't been able to mingle with the customers, which was basically my main job.
I know. That's the best part of your job is the networking portion. I'm going to tell you, that's the reason why that's how I like doing what I do is the networking portion.
The customers become friends and the regulars. And when you think back of Cheers and Norm, we've got a lot of people who are like Norm and like all the other people that came in to Cheers. It's family. They all become friends with each other.
It is a reality, and we become invested. Yeah. We become vested in each other, the customers to the establishment, and then the establishment to the customers.
The customers, of course.
And that's why I also feel that as a customer, I don't want these places to go away. So I will make my one plug about masks. Wear your masks.
Yes.
Because I don't want businesses to close.
You need the masks. You need to wear the masks. No matter what anybody thinks, this is real. This is here. It's hurting everybody.
Everybody.
So let's wear the masks like they're telling us to do. God willing, 4 to 6 weeks of everybody wearing masks might eliminate this.
Exactly. You might not want to do it for yourself, but then do it for the people that you care about.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to.
So, I mean, we've done everything that's been asked of us in the restaurants, in the hotel, in the banquet center, with the 6-foot distancing, with the masks, with we've brought in professional companies to sanitize the hotel and the restaurants and the banquet center, just to do whatever we possibly can do to make it safe for everybody.
That's right.
People come into our restaurant and they feel safe because there is a lot of social distancing. There is space between it. We will not permit people to hang out around the bars. Like, unfortunately, some people don't look at it like that.
They
want the income from it. And we do too. But if you don't have healthy customers, you're not going to have any income, period. You're not going to be there.
Exactly.
And that's what I don't think they see. A lot of them.
I know. I just think that it's one of those things that, and I get it. I could be as libertarian as you can be. Like, I don't like to be told what I need to do.
No.
But,
never.
But again, this to me is something beyond just myself. Yeah. And I feel like in order, I take what I want and I'm like, I want these businesses to maintain. Yeah. And I understand that I need to be responsible for helping out.
And it's not just for the businesses. It's for the public in general.
Yep.
It really is. It's so imperative that that happens, that we listen to what they're telling us to do.
Yes.
And you know what? It's a law that we have to wear seatbelts.
Yeah, exactly.
Do I like wearing a seatbelt? Not really.
No.
Do I put it on every time in the car? I do. As everybody else does or should do. It's for your own safety. It's for your health. Same thing with masks.
Exactly.
And same thing with social distancing.
And it's one of those things that I've learned, and sometimes I'm not successful, but I've learned that there are things that you put your foot down on and then you fight a little bit more about.
Yep.
And there are things that you don't.
Yeah.
And to me, this is not the battle to be had.
No, definitely not.
So
definitely not.
Yeah.
So
besides the mask wearing, which I hope everybody respects when they go into your establishment, so all your places remain open.
Thank you.
How has the pandemic impacted you guys in general? Like I know that I've heard out there when it comes to the unemployment, and then you have people who are getting paid unemployment, and then receive bonuses in addition to their unemployment. So it's difficult to get these people back to work.
Exactly.
So
exactly. The $600 bonus that they put on was, to me, one of the stupidest things that any government could possibly do.
I'm shocked.
What should have been done, and obviously I'm not the smartest person in the world, and I'm not in government to be able to do it, but what they should have done, think it out a little bit more. And you want to give out $600 to people? Give it to the people who are working on the front lines. Give it to the healthcare workers. Give it to the grocery clerks who are still taking care of us. Give it to the people who are working in the drug stores. I mean, that's who should have gotten an extra bonus.
Yes.
Not them getting just their regular pay, but still going to work.
Exactly.
Whereas everybody else making $800 and $1,000 a week sitting at home doing nothing.
Which is a complete contradiction to them wanting to open the economy but yet they make it less desirable for people to come back in to restart the economy, which I thought was, and again, like you, I'm no expert in government or economics, even though I did sign up for the master class. But I still feel like that's kind of a basic that, I mean, I'm not saying people are wrong for not taking advantage. I just think that people were given the unfortunate decision where it shouldn't have been given.
It's gone on too long.
Yeah, way too long.
It's gone on way too long. I hope to God it ends the end of July.
Me
which
too.
Is what it's supposed to, and they don't try to extend it any longer. Because if they do, it's going to destroy the workforce because they're not going to want to work.
No.
Everybody's going to say, well, why should I work?
I know. You're
why
giving me.
Why should I work? You're giving me money.
Listen, I would love $600 additional.
So would I. So would I. I mean, everybody would if you think about it.
I mean, I'd be probably more apt to spend it
and
still maintain working.
Yeah.
So then I can just have $600 in the pocket to throw back into the economy.
Exactly.
But again, it goes back to what you were saying. Give it to those that are still out there. Mm-hmm.
Give it to the ones who are working.
Not the ones
who
aren't.
Give them that reason to want to go to work.
Yeah.
And if you get them to go to work and they get extra money for going to work, then they're going to go out and spend it.
Exactly.
More so than giving them money to sit at home.
Where they're going to make sure they're going to hold on to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Well, they probably need to hold on to it.
Yeah. So. I mean, when we say about not knowing much about government or anything, when I went to ISU, I majored in economics.
Oh, did you really?
Minored in philosophy and political science.
Uh-huh.
So I had kind of a decent background about government. I love politics.
I was a political science major.
Really? Oh.
So my minor was in social science.
Okay.
And history. So, but I worked in the philosophy department under Shipka.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Dr. Shipka comes into our restaurants quite a bit. And when he first saw me, when we first opened Scachetti's,
yeah.
I went over and I introduced myself to him. And he says, he just looked at me and goes and looked. And then he said, I remember you.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, okay, that's either good or bad, one or the other.
I remember Dr. Shipka also, he did the intro to philosophy class, which was yep. a popular class for everybody to take at Youngstown State.
Yep.
And he would have a class of 100 kids, mm-hmm. and he took attendance. And your grade, if you missed a certain amount of classes, would be deducted.
Yep.
And which was like, you have 100 kids in your class, and you're taking attendance? Mm-hmm. He was strict.
He was. He was very, very strict. But you learned a lot from him.
Yes,
he was
you
amazing.
Did. Yes, you did.
And the first time when he came into Scachetti's and we talked and everything, 4 days later or 5 days later, I received a package in the mail, which was from Dr. Shipka. And it was his two books that he had written. And he had on the inside, he wrote them out to me and autographed them for me with aww. A nice little note on there. So, I mean, that meant a lot. That
That's
meant a
really
lot.
Cool.
It really is. He's just a super, super individual.
He really is. Yeah. And he actually does a lot for the community as well.
Oh, he does.
I know he was on the board for Mill Creek Park
mm-hmm.
for, I don't know if he still is, but he was there for a while.
Yeah.
Besides his participation and everything that he did at Youngstown State, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, he was really, really good on everything that he did.
Yeah.
Strict, but really good.
Yeah,
but that taught us a lot by him being strict.
And he's still a funny guy, too.
Oh, yeah. He was. He was. And he's a good customer now, so I'm proud. I'm happy. All the way around, I'm happy.
See? But that goes back to, like, everybody's vested in one another.
Yeah.
And it's a good full circle. And also, which I think makes our community awesome as well, is because we do have that opportunity where larger cities
they
do not.
You're right.
Which makes
you're
makes
right.
us all move back here
yeah,
after
yeah.
we move away for
it's
some
Main
time.
Main Street, USA.
That's
I
right.
I keep saying it's Main Street, USA.
That's right.
Best place to raise a family.
So what do you see or what would you like to see in the Valley over the next 10 years happen?
First of all, I'd like to see our Macy Lane project
well, <yeah. laughs>
get moving a little bit, which hopefully it's going to. We're hoping that's going to really be finished off and ready with all the infrastructure by within the next month.
Oh, wow.
So that's a good start. And it's just because of the COVID, they couldn't get employees to come in. Again, everybody was laid off. And, you know, well, we're making $1,000 a week. Why do we want to come and work around people and take a chance of getting sick? So that even hurt contractors all the way around. And then people weren't going and building the materials that we needed to be able to put the piping and everything in.
That's
so
right.
It put us really behind. What I would like to see for the community in the future, probably the biggest thing right now, is health for everybody within the next 10 years, that this goes away and people are back healthy and have learned something from all this, that their families are important. And this brought the families together, I think. And let's hope it continues and brings it back to what it was years ago with the families.
I think that there is definitely this nostalgia of how things used to be that you would see in your neighborhoods.
Yep.
Like people riding their bikes, walking.
Exactly.
Like I've met more neighbors during this passing by, mm-hmm. waving to each other than I have when we first moved here 3 years ago.
Because it got to the point that people were so busy.
All the time.
All they thought about was being at work and doing this and doing that. My father, rest his soul, had a saying, we're Lebanese. And he said...
Oh, I know swear words in Lebanese.
Ah, okay. So do I. But what he would always say is people in the United States live to work. And in Lebanon, they work to live.
That's true. That's very true.
And, you know, I always would remember him saying that. But I also got to the point that I was at work all the time. And, you know, you come home and you're tired, so you don't have time to go walk in the neighborhood and talk to your neighbors. And you don't have time to go visit like we used to when we were younger. We always visited. Everybody visited everybody.
Yes.
So there was friendship. There was family. And that was gone. So very possibly God's doing this to make us
get back
to where we were.
That's right. I completely agree with you.
And I hope it does.
And realizing that as much as we utilize social media, like I know I utilize it for work mm-hmm. a lot, but that does not trump or should ever replace an actual face-to-face.
No.
I mean, I think I was over my second Zoom happy hour with friends and was like, you know, this is, I feel like, depressing me even more than just actually...
You're not seeing each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So... I do think that that is something that I've definitely taken away. And you and I touched on this before we started the podcast, is this is difficult. The times are very difficult. But we need to try to remember to be patient and kind, because we're still in it.
We're still in it. We're still knee deep in it. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's not over.
No. Unfortunately.
And... If we're falling apart now, before it's supposedly going to hit us again,
we better be ready for it.
Exactly. We need to stay strong.
Yep, we definitely do. As far as anything else in the future, what I'd like to see the Youngstown area. We have a lot of good workers
mm-hmm.
in this community, and I'd like to see some major manufacturing come back into our area.
Agreed.
After we lost Lordstown and years ago when we lost the steel mills and everything, it really hurt and depressed our community. And we need to get it back. And hopefully our government officials are able to bring back some of these larger manufacturing jobs that we need.
We do need them.
That's what's going to rebuild our economy. That's what's going to make the mall come back again.
Yep.
And the plazas come back again. And retail come back, and people come back to the restaurants after the COVID is over.
Yes. And I do agree with that. Like, we do need some major manufacturing. We need some major businesses coming in doing some mass amount of employment.
Right.
Not just 10 employees.
Exactly.
We're talking about hundreds of employees.
Hundreds and thousands. That's
yes.
what we need.
And then not only that, when that happens, obviously businesses, retail, office, everything will do better, as well as residential. But in addition to that, I think those that are in Cleveland or in Pittsburgh will start saying, hey, we can commute as well a little bit more freely. Nice.
Exactly.
I know that wind sounded a lot stronger than what it actually is, but I think that will help us out as well, because this is a really great place.
It is. It really is. It's, to me, the place to live.
I agree.
There is no question in my mind. I could have probably moved anywhere I wanted. My brother moved to California.
Oh.
Wish he was here to help me with all this, but he's not. But I didn't want to move because my life is here. My friends are here. Our family's here. And our friends have become our family.
Well, I think that not only that, but thankfully you didn't, because you've made a great impact to our community.
Oh, thank you.
In a very positive way.
Thank
so
you. We've tried.
It's visionaries such as yourself that we need to maintain and bring back. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So hopefully you'll come back again.
God willing, I will.
He'll be like, Macy Lane is done.
Yep. But I have to wait for an invite again.
Oh, well, you'll get another one for sure. Especially if you keep bringing me bread.
Anytime. Right. It's always there for you.
Thank you.
So enjoy it.
And thank you for enjoying some Penguin City with
me.
That
sounds good.
Cheers.
Cheers.